So we have a good number of items here tonight. So I think we'll go ahead and get started. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And I'm actually going to send it right back to you because the first item is a share on scams.
Oh yeah, this is okay, just making Tom co-host. Okay, so this was interesting. I actually found out about this in an email that actually did come from Amazon. But Amazon Canada, or Amazon in general, is frequently used by scammers. You get emails saying that your delivery has been delayed or your account needs updating or something like that. And all you have to do is click on a link and you'll be taken to undoubtedly, the real Amazon site where you can put in your credentials and the attackers will get a hold of them and go shopping on your credit card. But you can actually verify if an email that you receive that says it was from Amazon is legit or not by checking in the Amazon Message Center. Next. So once you sign into your account, you go to the drop-down list where it says hello, whoever you are, accounts and lists, and you click on your account. Next. Okay, and next. And then you'll be brought into a screen, and one of the tiles within that screen is your messages. And you click on it. Next. And you'll see all of the messages that Amazon actually sent to you. And so you can validate that in this case, I actually got the message was stay safe by learning to identify and avoid impersonation scams was the email that I actually received. And sure enough, I went to the message center. It was listed there. I checked the timestamp. It was correct, except for the fact that they're Pacific time, so it's 3 hours out. But other than that, everything checked out, so I could tell that the email was actually a legit email. So kudos to Amazon for providing this functionality that you can use to validate messages. And that's it for that.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And next up, we have Tom Trottier, who's offering some information on reducing image file sizes using a program called Riot, apparently. And Tom, I believe you're going to share your screen and unmute your microphone.
You're still muted, Tom. Tom, are you there?
I am now. I had an
Okay.
unscheduled bottle break.
Okay. Okay,
So,
you are co-host, so you can go ahead and share your screen.
okay, share screen. Well, it's yes, and this is the one I want, and share. So you should be able to see it.
There we go.
I
Yep.
can see it. This is Riot, Radical Image Optimization Tool. It's, I don't know, it's probably about 10 years old, but he keeps updating it, so that's great. And it's a way of reducing the size of images in ways that are invisible. I mean, you can obviously reduce the size, but let's open a file. Okay, so I need a high resolution image. This is from my well, one of my cameras, but it says could be quite slow. But my computer is pretty fast, so I don't want to resize it now. We'll keep it big. It's currently 5184 by 3456, which Canon camera users will probably recognize. Okay, so we'll keep it like that. As you can see, it's an elephant or three. This is the way of that you can actually see what's what. One size, the right side is what is going to be the result, and the left side is the original. There's a variety of ways you can reduce the size of this image. That is the size of the image on disk. You can have the auto suggested format. As you can see up here, the optimized size, according to this, is 4.69 MIBs with the auto-suggested format. The initial image size is 13 megabits. Actually, megabytes, I guess. This is a suggested format. This is 4.69. You can choose some other ones here, auto original format. I'm not sure exactly what they do because I don't use them particularly, but there's other ways you can reduce the size of this image on disk. If you go down here, as you can see, this is a JPEG, but you can also reduce the size of WebP photos, PNGs, and GIFs in a variety of ways. One way to, since there is no printing in here and there aren't any small details. Actually, let's see what the details are like. If I can go to 1:1, there you are. So you can see what, how the details are. You can scroll with your mouse wheel. You can scroll in with control mouse wheel and you can scroll in further. But this is the 1:1. So let's keep it at that so we can see what the details are. Here, if you look down to the left, to chroma subsampling, that basically you can choose between whether you want the color to be as detailed as the luminance. And our eyes are far more sensitive to the color. Sorry, far more sensitive to the luminance. Here it's none, 444, which is what you need if you have any print inside your image. But you can reduce that to 411. And it's, as you can see, there's not much of a change here. In fact, let's just go in a bit and if you compare them, there's not much of a change. There's a little bit of change, in the image. And in fact, there's one of the buttons here will actually go back and forth between the original and the compressed image. Oh, as you can see, the optimized image is 3.79. That didn't wait long enough. But as you can see, there's very little difference. You can just see minor changes when you click this button, which is in place compare. Keep button pressed to activate, release to revert. And basically, it just switches sides, the images from side to side. So it goes from the original image to the other image. But there's other ways to compress it. We'll keep that. There's other ways to compress it. One way is to compress to size. This is 3.79 megabytes, but you can compress it further. For example, you can compress down to, this is one way to compress it. You can compress down to, well, I don't know, let's see. If we can compress it down to 100 kilobytes, how much is that? What does it look like? It's thinking. Oh, I could not obtain. Try a bigger value. That's what the message was. So let's try 500. That's probably more reasonable. It's working. You can see down at the bottom it says optimizing, optimizing, optimizing. It says ready. As you can see, it's rather different. But on the other hand, the size is 466 for an image that's 5184 pixels by 3100 or something like that. But that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to change the quality. Let's revert that. How do I revert that? Well, let's go to the auto-suggest format. Now it's re-optimizing to what's the auto-suggest, which is the 4.69 that we were at originally. But there's another way to do it, and that's that here the JPEG is at 80%. And now there's the chroma subsampling has been back to 444. But let's try this at, we can move this down. Let's try it. Oh, come on, wake up. Oh, it's, let's try 60%. This is the standard kind of JPEG percent. It's 60%. It's down to 3 megabytes. And if we go to 1-to-1, it's pretty comparable. If I go to switch back and forth, again, you don't see much difference between the two. How about 40% over here? And I'll press enter. It's optimizing and it's ready. It's now down to 2.21 megabytes. And if I click to compare, again, there's not much difference. How about if I change that to 20% and press enter? It's optimizing. Now let's see the difference. Again, there's not much difference. And if I zoom in, this is about almost 200%. You can see how this changes, the kind of the face of the little elephant changes a bit, becomes a little more rough. Now, if I change the chroma as well, let's go down to the worst chroma. It's optimizing. And now let's see. The size has gone down to 1.17 megabytes. And again, there's a bit of a difference at 100%. If I go back to the full size, can you tell the difference between these? There's a little bit of difference here in the quality, but that's what the sort of thing you can do. Now, if you want to reduce the size, I'm not sure. Let's see. Can we edit? I don't think we can change the size except, compress the size. That's this thing. I don't think we can actually reduce the numbers in pixels of the image from here. But that's at 20%. How about 10%? As you remember here, it's 1.17 megabytes. We go down to 10%, it's ready, and it's a little bit different. You can see there's a red tinge here that wasn't there before. There's a whole variety of little red marks all over this image that weren't there before. If I go to 1-to-1 and then flip back and forth, it seems like the original is kind of very even, and the changed one has these red things, and it's down to 656 kilobytes. So those are the ways you can change it in Riot. This is the manual mode, which is what we were doing. By the way, there's a variety of things you can choose here. Encoding, in general, you want to use progressive when it's over about 10 kilobytes. So that's almost all our images these days. It results in higher compression. If I go back to this chroma subsampling and I go back to none, let's see what changed. It's optimizing, loading result. It still doesn't get rid of the blue tint. If I switch back and forth between the two quickly, you'll see in the change in the original, there's a bit more detail and less red. In the change one, it's more blocky, and then there's these red tints here and there. But that's here. If you look at here, or you look at the leaves, let's look at the leaves. The leaves are sharper in the original, and they're fuzzier here. So you can reduce this originally 13 megabyte image down to 735 kilobytes, not changing the size. Just by using Riot to do that, it's You may not want to do this for things you're going to print, but if you're reducing things for the web, where you want to save communication time, then Riot will help do that. There's also an option in UrfanView. This is UrfanView. And if we open UrfanView, we open a file. This is the same file. This is the image. When you go to save it, as you can see here, the size is 13.22 megabytes. If you go to File, Save As, if you, when in UrfanView there's this option, there are a variety of save things. You can keep the original EXIF data and IPC, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also a set file size. And this uses a the Riot plugin, so you can actually reduce it without knowing the difference, or seeing the difference, to whatever size you want it to be. You know, if you want to, for example, reducing it to a particular size, if you want to load your picture into some website, like where you want to put your portrait in or something like that, and they say it's limited to 4 megabytes or 400 kilobytes, this will do it, and it's really, unless you start compressing it way, way, way down, it's really almost invisible to see the difference, at least for most people. But that's what, and one of the options that you have in UrfanView. And let's get out of there. So we're back to Riot. Now, are there any questions?
Nothing in the chat.
No, there weren't, Tom. Thanks very much.
Okay.
I put the links for both of Tom's presentations in the chat window. So if you want to try either Riot or UrfanView, then the URLs are right there. So thanks very much. Okay, moving along. We have a question came in, and Chris is going to talk about Bitdefender.
Yeah, Bea Alt, who's on the call tonight, she sent me this by email, saying that whenever she opened Edge, she would get a message from Bitdefender saying that it had blocked multiple dangerous sites, and it only happened on first opening it, and it didn't happen during normal browsing. And an example of it is on the screen there. Next. So you'll see that the actual message really is talking about an expired certificate to a given website. Next. So, you know, what's happening? And I think there's one possibility of it is that the start page has been changed by something. Another program decided to change the start page, and there's a problem with that. It was a new problem, so what changed during that period? When it all of a sudden started happening, what was else had changed on the computer? Sometimes it can be really hard to tell. But you know, you can look and see what your start page is, and I did it in Edge here because that's what B is using, where you click on the kebab menu and you go to settings, and then within settings there's a thing for startup, and it says when Microsoft Edge starts, you can either open the new tab page or you can have it open specific pages. And so you could check to see, did something change my start page to something else that is actually causing this? So you could either switch back to being the default of open a new tab page, or you could try and figure out what was that changed your start page. Next. So another possibility I thought of was that you might have an extension that has changed the start page. And I could see this happening, that some vendor in their infinite wisdom has decided that their extension is so wonderful and they're going to set your start page to something new that will give you some new functionality related to their extension or the products that they sell or whatever. Next. So if you want to check for that, I would suggest going in and disabling extensions one by one and see if the problem goes away. Or you could disable half of them and see if the problem goes away. If it doesn't, you know, re-enable those and disable the other half or whatever you need to do. But eventually you should be able to, if it's what's causing the problem, that you'll find out what extension it is that is actually causing the issue for you. Next. And while you're there, I highly recommend that you look at your extensions that you have loaded and remove any extensions that you don't need. They're going to be affecting probably the performance of your browsing. They are a potential security risk if there's a vulnerability in any of the extensions. So if you don't use some extensions, just click the remove button and get rid of it. Or if you just want to try your browsing without it, you can just toggle them on or off and just see if you get along fine without the extensions. And then if after a period of time you find you really don't use that extension, so at that point, remove it. Next. If neither of those two possibilities turned out to be the solution for the problem, you might want to do a reset on the browser. And in Edge, you go to the kebab menu and then go to Settings, Next. And then you go to, in the left-hand panel, Reset Settings, and then there's a single option there to restore settings to the default status. Next. Now, you have to be a little bit careful here because different browsers are going to remove different things. So in this case with Edge, it tells you that it's going to reset the start page, the new tab page, the search engine, and any of your pinned tabs. It'll turn off extensions, all of them, clear temporary data like cookies, and they say your favorites, history, and saved passwords will not be cleared. Now, that's where you have to be a little bit careful because a different browser may say that it's going to clear all your passwords too. If it doesn't tell you what it's going to clear, I would Google it to find out what it actually is going to clear before you do the reset. Next. So the answer was, B came back and said there were only two extensions that she had, Bitdefender and Google Docs. And I think that's Google Docs for offline use is the full name of it. Remove the Google Docs extension, and the problem was solved. Next. So I kind of like to hear that, yes, something did solve it. But I think this may have been an incidental thing that it actually solved the problem. Next. So I wanted to go ahead and do this share because I thought it was interesting as a generalized problem where if you're having problems in the browser, some of the things that you can actually check to see what might be causing it. So anytime you're having weird things happen in the browser, extensions are good to look at. If it looks like it might be related to the home page because it only happens when the browser opens and not later, whatever. A bunch of tips you can go through to try and figure out what is causing your problem. But in this case, did we really have to go through all of that? Probably not. Next.
Now, somebody's complaining here that your thinker only has three fingers on the right hand.
Maybe the other one is behind the mouse. Yeah, or maybe they only have three fingers. Hey, who did it say?
Side button in the mouse. Yeah.
Okay, so if we look again at this report that came up that B was complaining about, it was complaining about an expired certificate to a specific website. So I Googled Google Docs extension because B said removing that extension actually cured the problem. And then I just put in the URL that it was going to or the website it was going to. And I found on the Microsoft Answers Forum, Microsoft employee responded to somebody's post. And they said, NellReports.net is a Microsoft domain. And several certificates used by the subdomains of this domain expired last week. And so they said the relevant team has been notified about the expired certificate expiration and will correct the issue. So in actual fact, I don't think it was really the Google Docs extension. It was actually an expired certificate. And shame on Microsoft for letting any of their certificates actually expire. So I left in all of the previous stuff because I thought it was a good exercise that people can go through. But in this particular case, I think it was just simply an expired certificate. And quite frankly, an expired certificate is not really a threat to your computer at all. Nobody should let their certificates expire, but all it's doing is the certificate, really all it's doing is it's ensuring that the data is encrypted between your computer and the server. And an expired certificate is going to encrypt the data just as well as an unexpired certificate. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about expired certificates. And that's all I have on that.
Which makes me wonder, why do they expire?
Well, all certificates have an expiry date. So it's up to the website owner or the person who bought the certificate to renew the certificate. Actually, I shouldn't say they all have an expiry date. Probably they have an expiry date, and most of them are probably fairly short, like a couple of years. And I think the certificate issuers, they want more money for a renewal on a certificate, so they make some more money, is really what it all comes down to. So.
No, they all expire, and there's a reason for that, is that sometimes certificates leak out, that's the reason they expire them, so they disappear. And the free certificates from Encrypt Now or something like that,
yeah,
they expire in 60 days, but they automatically renew. Okay. And most of the other ones automatically renew as well, but apparently not Microsoft's.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. So next up we were talking about solid state drives, and Stuart remembered something that he'd seen he wants to tell us about. When he unmutes his microphone.
There we go. The magic of the stylus. Actually, this is sort of a half-arsed update to Chris's call for alternative storage drive storage manufacturers following last week's Q&A. We were mostly talking about spinning storage, but I figured, well, solid state drives are big enough now. They can probably spin if they want to. Anyhow, I was cruising Newegg's website Cyber Monday, and I was reminded of a company called Team Group, not T-Force, Alan. But Team Group was a Taiwanese company I encountered several years ago, pre-pandemic, and they seemed to be selling a lot of stuff on the West Coast. Newegg and Amazon, of course, picked up quite a bit, and they're across the continent, but there were a lot of smaller West Coast retailers that had their stuff. They had some tremendous deals on SD cards and USB flash drives that I can't remember right now because, you know, memory, eh? In one ear, out the other. I've only got about 5 seconds worth. Don't push it. But this ad was actually posted on the net just recently, so we've got a copy here. They have a 4 terabyte SATA drive that could replace a spinning hard drive for $199. That's not bad. I don't know about anybody else at the moment, but I thought that was a pretty good one. So maybe I should mention Team Group to the group in case anybody wanted to get their hands on some faster storage for their devices and didn't want a spinning hard drive. But don't Google Team Group because you won't find any prices. You'll have to go through a retailer such as Amazon, Newegg, or that shady guy down on the corner with the heavy raincoat who's got little SSD drives and USB flash drives dripping out of his pockets. Real good stuff.
I put a link on. There's a website that's kept up to date, and I think it's Canadian. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's U.S. But they have the prices of hard drives and SSDs. The cheapest currently right now is $6.24 per terabyte for a Seagate Enterprise 8-terabyte spinning disk.
$24 for an 8-terabyte drive?
No, it's actually $50. It's $6.24 per terabyte, so that's 8 times 6.25. So that's about 50. It's $50.
$50 for an 8-terabyte drive.
It's got to be U.S.
Oh yeah, well that's
even U.S.
35% more.
even U.S. prices, that would be dirt cheap.
Yeah, well, U.S. bullion.
I'd be really suspicious about that.
Not green.
That's
green.
Too cheap.
Bullion.
No. Okay, thanks, Stuart. Just out of interest, T-Force is actually their kind of brand for SSDs. Team Group is the company.
Oh, okay, one of their model lines.
And they have a whole bunch of flash drives and NVMe drives and and stuff, and T-Force is a SSD one. And if you go to Newegg, that was just one of their offers on Cyber Monday. They also had some smaller ones at even less prices, so they had a good selection of stuff there. Okay, well, talking about SSDs, Serge Eric sent us an interesting piece of software, which is produced by Gibson Research, looking at solid-state drives, USB drives. And Gibson Research, if you recall, is the company that produces SpinRite and also Shields Up, which lets you go online and check out all the ports on your router and see if they're all closed and you're running in stealth mode. And the reason that we're interested in SSDs and USB flash drives is, of course, because some of those fantastic prices that Stuart was getting from that guy in the raincoat on the corner, he's selling these 1 terabyte drives for almost nothing, but then it turns out they're actually fake drives. And we've talked about this before at Q&A. And indeed, Steve Gibson says that he purchased 12 of these things, 1 to 2 terabyte thumb drives, from Amazon, and every one was a fake. So he came up with this piece of software, which Serge Eric recommended to us. It's called Valley Drive, and it's basically freeware. And so you download it and run it against a USB drive, and it will basically tell you if everything's green, and this is good. And if it's a fake drive, like the one on the right, then the 1 terabyte assumed storage only has a couple of gigabytes, maybe, of actual storage that's useful. So it turns out both Chris and I had a use for this, and so we checked it out. And I just purchased these micro USB thumb drives. They're nominally 32 gig. I bought them from Amazon, but you notice that they're SanDisk. So that's in my view, that's a reputable manufacturer. They're blister packs, so I think they should be in good shape. But I thought I would check them out using this software since it was available. So here's File Explorer looking at the USB drive, and it's telling me that it's a 32 gig capacity with 1.5 meg in junk files that they've included on the file. So it looks all right as far as File Explorer is concerned. But I can I can try it against this Valley Drive program. So I say, okay, I just load the program. I say, check the USB drive. And it says, well, we're going to look at Windows Drive S, which is a 64 gigabyte drive. Well, that's looking at my SD card, not at this 32 gig USB thumb drive. It's looking at this guy, which I just bought to replace a smaller one that was suspect, shall we say. Anyway, so what I really want to do is run it against I'm here, I might as well run it against this 64 gig drive and see what happens. And I get a perfectly green map, which is probably good. But it turns out when you hit close here, you get some additional information. It gives you a report. It gives you some information about the actual drive, serial numbers and size and that kind of stuff. It gives you a copy of the map. Interesting, you can't resize this window. You have to scroll down here. And when you scroll down, then you get a whole bunch of performance statistics and read times and write times and all that kind of good stuff. And if you care about those things. And anyway, I've still got the problem that I haven't looked at my 32 gig drive. So I close it again, and I want to now introduce the disk that I want to check. But you notice it says that if the USB is inserted, I have to take it out, wait for a while, and then plug it back in. So that's what I had to do. I had to take out my SD card, take out my thumb drive, plug the 32 gig thumb drive back in again, and then try running this program over again. So this time, when the when the thumb drive is the only drive in the system, it recognizes it as a 32 gig drive. I can click on validate this drive, and here it is in slow motion. It actually does a random check, reading data from the drive and then writing it back, or checking that it can write to the actual storage. This is one point to bear in mind. If you're checking it against a disk that has data files on it, it does actually read those files. It deletes them, overwrites their storage locations, and then writes them back onto the drive in the same place. So in theory, you don't lose any data. That's just a caution. It's always a problem when things are reading and writing stuff that you want to keep. Maybe you should make sure you have a backup of anything that before you do one of these destructive read-write tests. Anyway, basically what it's doing here is it's wandering about all over the drive, checking different blocks and adding the color appropriately. And sure enough, when it finishes, I've got, again, a full green, good to go. Everything's fine and dandy. So Chris is going to talk next because he tried it against a couple of flash drives.
Before we move on, that idea of it not recognizing the right drive, the way the program is really designed to work, as far as I could see, was you run the program and then insert the drive, and it will recognize that, oh, a new drive just popped up, and it'll go, I assume this is the one that you want to check. And I think that's probably a good thing, because you could have a number of devices that are connected on your system, and you're going, oh, which one is it? And this way, if you have it already inserted, pull it out and leave the program running, put it back in, and it will recognize that, oh, there's a new device. Is this the one that you want to scan? And so I personally think that's a good sort of safety factor to make sure you're scanning the right device. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, well, just my preference would be to ask me which drive I want to check. But by the same token, it's freeware, so the way it works is the way it works.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah, I ran this, and this is the results from a good flash drive. And I put good in quotes because I'm not so sure that this is really a good flash drive. It's good in that all areas of the disk, or they check some like 576 different areas on the drive, randomly around the drive, the inner parts, outer parts, all the rest of it. So it was able to read and write from all areas. But if you look at the time on this, and this is in microseconds, so this is millionths of a second. So it reads pretty fast, 27 millionths of a second, but it went to overflow on writes. And you can see that it spent 99.71% of its time trying to write to this device and only 0.29% of the time reading. So this device had a severe problem. It ran for a couple of hours before it completed. So even though it's a good drive in that it is not a fake USB, there's something severely wrong with this drive, and I would not want to actually use it, because the Lord only knows, first off, have I got the patience to wait for it to write files to it, and second off, is it going to fail at some point in the near future? So next. And you can see here how it's really slow on the writes, 8 seconds per write operation, and that's like one block on the device, 8 seconds average. That's really, really slow. Next. And we see that the total write time was over 79 minutes that I let this run before it came up with the total. And even Steve Gibson didn't think that anybody was going to have it take this long, because it overflowed whatever buffer space he set aside for calculating the total time. So pretty bad. Next. Now here's what I would consider to be a bad flash drive. So the previous one I don't think was fraudulent. So it was just bad, but it was not a fake drive saying that it was bigger than it actually is. In this case here, we see two green blocks. So those were areas that were written to successfully, and read from successfully. But in between those, as well as scattered throughout the drive, we have yellow ones which have a write error. Now, so again, this is just a bad drive. It's not fraudulent, but it's just a crappy flash drive that I got. And I bought this from Temu. If anybody wants to avoid Temu, I got my money back on all five that came in the pack. I just said they're lousy drives, and they gave me my money back. But this is an example of where you'll see successful writes are scattered throughout the drive, but a lot of actual problems right into that particular drive. And that's it for me on what I found on using that program. I like ValidDrive. It looks like it's a good program. It normally, on a good flash drive, it will probably run in under 10 seconds.
So did you buy those from that guy in the raincoat on the street corner?
No, worse. I bought it from Temu.
So Timothy's asking if there's a name for the good generic drive. I guess they're all the same, but did they have a brand name?
These ones don't. The ones that I tested, they have no markings on them whatsoever. And they came in came with a little piece of paper in it, a user manual. And it says that they are manufactured by Kootion, Kootion Information Technology Company Limited, in Guangdong Province, China. And that's all. They didn't have a brand name on them or anything like that at all. They were just
okay. Thanks, Chris. All right. So keeping on the theme of solid-state drives, but not for very long, I just got a follow-up here on. You remember my friend's laptop that was running really slow, and we'd done some hard disk checking on it and thought that the hard drive was basically dying. So my solution was to install a Black Friday Samsung solid-state drive, which really speeded the computer up. And I also gave it a brand new installation of Windows 10, actually the French edition. However, we ran into a little problem. So here you can see File Explorer, and here is the quick access menu and the library for Image, the pictures. And when you look at the library, you can see there's a bunch of folders and there's a bunch of images in that area. And if you right-click on Image and do a Properties, you'll see that it's pointing to C:\user.liet, which is my friend's username, and there's 18.5 gigabytes of pictures inside the folder. If you look at it further down, you see a listing for the same library under this PC. And yet when you look at when you open that library, you don't find any folders, and the images that are there are different than the ones that were in the one in quick access. And again, if you right click on this image, and this is just looking at all the libraries. So here's the library in the list, and here's the library in the icons. If you right-click on one of these guys and look at properties, then you can see that it's pointing to the same folder, C:\user.liet, but it's only 400 megabytes of pictures in this area. So I was kind of curious. So I look at this image here, and it's looking at drive C, the user's directory, the username, and the image folder inside that C:\users, and that's pointing to the right place. And sure enough, if I right click and look at it, then there's the 18.5 gigabytes of files. And what I've done here is I've actually gone into in File Explorer, I scroll down, I've gone down here to drive C and then users, and then gone down to the username and to the images folder in the actual tree directory. So I'm looking at C:\user.liet image, and I'm seeing the right number of megabytes of files. However, if you look closely, you can see that there's actually two listings for image inside the users.liet folder. So this top one was the one we're just looking at, had the 18 and a half gigabytes. But if we look at the one lower down, the second one, this is the one that's pointing to the 400 megabytes. So I said to myself, this is no problem. This is just a listing in this folder. So I'll just delete this one because it's clearly it's wrong. I just should get rid of it. So I right click on this guy and delete it and refresh. And Windows in its wisdom, the French version of Windows, now has decided that the image library should be called Pictures. And even worse than that, C users liet Pictures isn't available. It doesn't exist. And so this is a WTF moment. What on earth is happening here? So I had to hit Mr. Google. How do I sort out libraries? So one of the first listings I came across said, well, you just scroll down this left-hand panel until you find this libraries thing. You right-click on it, and you'll find restore the default libraries, and all will be well. Except when I look down this listing and I get to this PC, I don't find a listing called libraries. And so I thought, well, I'll just type libraries up here, I think. And what it does is it pulls up all these libraries. And this is actually my machine now. I didn't do this on my friend's machine, but it's pointing to this pictures icon here. And I wanted to get rid of that, remember? So I went back to Mr. Google and tried again and found some other information. And this time it's telling me how to restore the default settings in Windows 10. And I think somewhere it says right click on something or other. So there's some instructions in there somewhere. So it basically says go to a library like Pictures, right click on that library and select properties. And when you select properties, then you get this window popped up. And now you want to choose location. And when you choose location, then we're now back on my friend's machine. I've got C colon users liet pictures. So I get rid of pictures and type in image. I say OK or apply. Set this parameter to the default. And bingo, quick access says image. This PC says image. The library says image. And when I right-click on any of those images, I get 18 and a half gigabytes of files. So now all is right with the world. Now, if anybody can explain to me how that happened, how Windows gets two listings for the pictures library, and why I can't just delete one of them and make it go away, then please let me know. I'll be happy to hear from you. And I noticed in the chat there was a note from... I think it was Elizabeth. Yeah, Elizabeth. And she said that she had a similar problem with an external drive giving bizarre error codes, and she was able to format it, but still it was problems. So she bought a new external drive and plans to hit the old problem drive with an axe, which is probably a good idea because I've got the same problem with my friend's flaky drive. It kind of works, but I don't trust it. But I don't think it's probably useful to try and zap it with a secure erase type program because it's probably going to take forever. Okay, anything else in the chat we should be talking about, Chris?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so we're at the witching hour. We got into the last 10, just in the last 9, I guess. So if anybody has any questions or comments on stuff that we've covered or new stuff that they want to know about, now is the time to ask your questions. And don't all yell at us.
If we can go back to Riot.
I beg your pardon?
If we can go back to Riot.
Yes.
There's a button on bottom right. I think it's for resizing the image. And Tom, you showed that to us at the beginning, showing that this was the size of your picture. And I think you can resize it there. I'm not sure. I just saw that when I downloaded it. bottom right, next to compressed to size?
That's compressed to size. Down here?
But just next to it.
We're not seeing your screen, Tom.
Okay. Okay. This one or this one?
Hang on a second. I have to switch back.
Oh yeah, that's, you're right. This is how you resize your, well, let's bring in an image, I guess. Let's bring in this guy. Yeah, you're right. This is, by the way, this does, probably it does a better resizing than most other software, but you can resize it, I believe. This is the thing that came up at the beginning where I loaded it.
Yeah.
So you can download, you can reduce it to another size. Down here, you can keep the aspect ratio if you want, or you can change it to, let's see.
That can be really handy if you're only going to display it on screen. The larger screen you're likely to display it on would be a 4K monitor. So there, it makes no sense to have, 6,000 pixels if your monitor is only going to be, it's going to be under 4,000 pixels. So reducing its actual dimensions is a really good idea.
That's all I noticed.
Yep, you're right. This button here.
Good eagle eye there, Serge. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Do we have any other questions or problems or anything like that in our final minutes? We have 5 minutes left, 6 minutes left. If anybody
okay,
has
I
any
have
others.
A strange question. Oh, no, go ahead, Irene.
Oh, well, it's going to be quick. Thank you very much, Chris. My 75-year-old friend has her email back thanks to you, and she's totally delighted. She still is not going to get the tablet, but until her computer actually dies. But anyway, she's glad to have her email back. So thank you very much.
Oh, Chris. Good. Good to hear. Thank you. B, you had something?
Yeah, I have a strange security question. My online banking sends a message to my email telling certain things like you got a deposit and so on and so forth. And I was actually thinking that's quite unsafe. They seem to suggest that you should do that. It sort of alerts for major changes of some sort. But it seemed to me that having your banking information go into your email, when your email could easily be hacked, is not such a great idea.
Well, I have two thoughts about that. First off, I like getting alerts so that I can react if I all of a sudden see a transaction going through that I didn't initiate. Then I can contact the bank immediately and say, hey, the following was a transaction on my account. I didn't do it, so look into it. So I think it's good on that front. The second thought of you're saying that your email can be easily hacked, that's the issue that you should actually address because your email shouldn't be easily hacked.
Okay.
If you have a strong password on your email, and especially if you have two-factor authentication turned on your email should definitely not be easily hacked.
Okay.
So I would say address that if you are concerned about your email being attacked. One of the reasons why you almost certainly want to make sure that your email is quite secure is that it is often used for password recovery on other sites,
yes,
where they will email you a new password. Well, mm-hmm. if somebody does a password reset on, your Facebook or whatever, and they send a reset code to your email, and they have hacked your email to be able to get those codes, then you've got all kinds of things that are being compromised. So it's really, really important that your email, especially your email that is used for password recovery on anything else, is very secure.
And I would think the only thing to be concerned about banks sending you email is that you, I presume they don't, but you wouldn't want to click on a link in the email to go to your bank to log up.
No, yeah, no, they just say,
the bank government
deposited so and so much money, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I have that, and I have that on my credit card as well, my main credit card, that any transaction over a dollar, I get an email saying the transaction went through, and it says the amount and the vendor and things like that. So if my card is ever compromised, then I will see very quickly transactions that are going on it, and I can call up the card company and say, hey, freeze my card or right. whatever, it's obviously been compromised. I think those sort of notifications are really good.
I think Bea's really lucky because I never get one saying somebody's deposited money. It's always the opposite. So good on you, Bea.
I wish.
I wish, yeah.
There's some advantages to being a senior. So I obviously need to work on my email security. Okay, so I'll look into that and just see if I'm secure.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Do you have a link for making sure your Gmail is up to scratch?
Long password and do two-factor authentication.
Okay.
If you do those two things, the likelihood of your email being compromised is really, really, really reduced. Two-factor authentication is a huge step.
So does that mean that you sign into your email every time you use it? You don't leave it on? You don't leave signed in?
No, in actual fact, the way that it works with Gmail is on any one computer, you will get a two-factor message at least the first time, and you may get it periodically later. But it only pops up when it's on a new device is typically what happens. So you're
it's not every time you sign in that you... open your email.
Yeah. It depends. There are certain circumstances that can cause it to do that. But typically I find that my Gmail on my desktop, I never get the two-factor authentication message. I got it once at the start, and I never get it again.
Okay.
By the way, a long password is not 10 characters. A long password is 20 characters. That doesn't have to be all random. I use words in mine and... along with some punctuation and other stuff.
Yeah.
But so it's fairly memorable and easy to type rather than cut and paste rather than little pokes. But it should be long, 20 characters or more, 20 to 30 usually.
Okay.
It's very good.
I highly recommend think passphrase as opposed to a password. So come up with a random, like don't do... you know, where no man has gone before things like that. But if you just
some random
four random words strung together or unrelated words, the moon is made of cheese. You know, something that's not going to be in a dictionary that hackers use. But you can easily type it in. That's the best thing. And I do give a presentation at the Ottawa Public Library, and I think I have a couple still coming up on managing passwords.
You're safer with the moon is made with broccoli because the moon is made is a common.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
I
would love to go to those, but I don't get out much anymore. Which would be a password phrase, but too common.
But from your background, you're already out.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Well, there's my dear.
To come back to what Alan was saying earlier about clicking in emails, I have this alert as well on my credit card, and I receive sometimes emails saying that the transaction has gone through, and I don't click on anything. I go to my account, check right away, and there's nothing's happening there. So there's scams that they're trying to get you to click in the email. They look legitimate, those emails.
Hey, interesting.
Yeah, seen those too.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, I use Alterna as a bank, and they sent me an email with a clickable link in it 5-6 years ago. And I just stared at the email for some time, and I said, screw that. And I phoned them up, and I said, I got this email with a clickable link in it to do XYZ. Is this really you guys? He said, yeah, yeah, that's us. Are you out of your mind?
Not good practices, that's for sure.
And I've never got another one from them with a clickable link.
You're on the blacklist, Steve.
Maybe it's just me, but anyone else who banks with Alterna can thank me. You know, if you choose. Small banks. God bless them. Their hearts are
okay,
in the
I'm
right
going
things.
To move on to wrap up. I'm moving on to wrap up tonight then. So here's your early Christmas present. Notice of our December meeting. Bob Harris is going to be talking about YouTube. That will be December the 13th. So don't miss that. But before that, next week will be December the 6th. And that's our next Q&A session. So if you have questions that we haven't talked about tonight, topics that you'd like to share, like the one that Tom and Serge Eric, or the ones that Tom and Serge Eric gave us, send us a note, and we'll be most happy to add you to the agenda. Hope you enjoyed tonight. Lots of good stuff, lots of good chat, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. See you next week.